Welcome to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goals of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with the chronic illness of sickle cell disease. And today, as a special treat, we have Marissa, who's doing our show with us, and we will be talking to...
We'll be speaking with Amy Mason, who is also a person living with sickle cell and the director, creator of Sickle Cell, annual Sickle Cell Cruise, and Facebook advocate.
Welcome, Amy.
Hey, how are you?
We're doing great. We're so happy that you're joining us today. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I'm born and raised here in Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, 34. I got into advocating about sickle cell as I got older. When I got older, I felt comfortable or more comfortable doing it. Wish I had done it when I was younger, but I think it was more of didn't want to be bullied in school or get picked on, things of that sort, so I kind of just kept it, under wraps. I'm a nanny for a living. I just do as much as I can. I work really well with children, so I have that knack that makes me want to help out anyone. It's just in my blood. I can't control it. You know, that's just kind of how I was raised. I'm a grandmother's baby, so that's where I get that nurturing spirit from. That's how she, like everyone called her grandmother. So that's just where it is.
Yeah, I have one of those. She was mama and grandmom to everybody. And I think that is kind of where I got my basis for being the polar bear mom that I admit that I am today.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have a question, because as the mother with Marissa, I was, and because my brother had sickle cell and my mom was the way she was, we were very much outspoken and we let everybody know that Marissa had sickle cell. And I've been speaking with, for other advocates for the last 2 years. And I'm really surprised at how many people that I speak to mention the same thing you did about not wanting to tell people and having been bullied. And can you tell us a little bit more about that experience?
I can remember, in middle school, and this one was really crazy to me. We were on break, and I ended up getting a drink from the canteen, drinking some type of snack. And I had one of my friends ask for, a sip of drink, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. You can have some. But, I mean, at that point, I was talking about sickle cell. Mm-hmm. But after they drank the drink, then it came up. They're like, oh, my God, I'm going to get sickle cell. I can't believe I just drank behind you. So, like, after that, that was it for me, really, because, people were treating it like it was HIV or like I was some type of plague, and at that age, it's hard to try to fit in and try to explain to somebody what's really going on.
Right.
With you when you're not even 100% sure yourself, you're just kind of taking it as you go. So after that one incident, I just kind of said, that's something I'm going to keep to myself because I just don't want to have to deal with this on top of just the peer pressures of school. So.
Well, yeah, because that is a very difficult period. And I know I say this all the time and kids laugh at me. Mean girls. They really exist. I grew up with all
they
boys.
They really exist.
And so I didn't have a whole lot of experience. And therefore, when I was at that stage, I wasn't really in tune to it. So I think that the work that you're doing and so many of the other young advocates are really helping our younger generation understand that process and suffer less for it.
I've had so many different incidents. It's unreal. And even with me having I have a sister that has sickle cell. We both have SS. She's 8 years older than I am. But, even still, we're like night and day. She's the one that's less sick, and I'm the one that's sick all the time. So even growing up with someone, I still didn't have anybody I could really relate to. About sickle cell. It was just something we didn't talk about, I guess. And then for the longest time, we were misdiagnosed. I have medical records that I just posted from not long ago that actually kept stating, that this child has rheumatoid arthritis. Me, you know, this whole time I would be getting sick. So for those, you know, 8 years that my sister was here, she never knew what was going on with her. There was a misdiagnosis. They just wrote it off as being rheumatoid arthritis.
Wow.
So it was, when they finally diagnosed me, they're like, you know what? This might be what's wrong with her sister. Let's go ahead and test her for this. So it was just so backwards on how things happened. And I have to thank my kindergarten teacher. If it wasn't for her, I don't even know if I'd be allowed to even be talking to you guys, because I stayed sick, so sick that I can remember it. She would have me in her lap in class, kindergarten, just, you know, rubbing my back or whatever she could to get me comfortable. I can remember just like yesterday. And then she, you know, eventually she called my mom. She's like, look, we have to get her another doctor because something is really wrong. I don't know what it is, but we've got to figure it out. So I had to thank her. And I just reunited with her, I guess, about 3 years ago. Looked her up, and she's still teaching kindergarten. I felt like I need to thank her because, you know, without her actually showing genuine concern, and this was a teacher, somebody that cared, that was kind of like the breakthrough for what was going on with my family and my sister. So
that's
amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. That's what
yeah. Always talk I was really overwhelmed when I reunited with her because I'm thinking, well, this is going to be a long shot. We haven't seen each other for 27 years. And I just kind of Google searched her, and I sent an email, and I was like, hey, I'm Amy. You know, do you remember me? I think you were my kindergarten teacher. And she responded immediately and remembered just like yesterday. So, and it's crazy because, like I said, she still teaches kindergarten. I went to her class recently, and I speak to her 5-year-old students about sickle cell. So it just kind of worked out. In the end,
that's we're both going, wow,
that's
yeah.
Amazing.
And
yeah.
And so she, your teacher, was your very first advocate.
She was my very first advocate, and I still have like a little scrapbook where the kids in my class, they all wrote little get well notes. I remember them. They didn't take a field trip, but it almost felt like a field trip. My teacher was there, and a bunch of my classmates came to the hospital to see me. So, you know, it was then that it was like, okay, this is the issue, something wrong. So I can't, you know, thank her enough for it.
Right. So. Well, it's one of the things we talk a lot about is how important it is to have a diagnosis, and that the two of you could go as long as you did. I know this was a while back in medical science years. This story, I mean, I think we can use your story as we're talking to people to tell them that they've got to go past maybe that initial doctor, you know, and the need to keep going until you get a diagnosis. Because I say a diagnosis is like a treasure map, right? It's your place to start. And if you don't know where you're starting, then you're just spinning your wheels. So talk to us a bit more about some of your more recent experiences. Now, I understand that you just said that you had more, I'm imagine, more crisis than your elder sister.
Yes, tons. It's unreal. Like, we are night and day when it comes to that. I don't get it. But, you know, when she gets sick, it's really, really bad for her. But I think that it's, she's not used to, you know, being in crisis, so she takes it worse, you know, than I would. It's almost times like when I see her sick, because I wish it was times that I could just tag in and say, okay, you go home, and I'll take this crisis for you. It's been 6 months since I've been hospitalized, and that's really good for me.
Yeah,
really good. The last time I was sick was in November, but a year from 2 days ago was one of the worst crises I've ever felt in my life. They actually deemed me paralyzed when I got to the hospital. You know, they're like, we don't know if you're going to be able to walk, you know, again. But with me, I'm the type, you can tell me, okay, this what's going on with you, but I'm so positive when it comes to sickle cell that I told them, I was like, it's fine. Like, I'm going to walk right out of the hospital. You don't have to worry. I'm going to walk out. And as sure as the world, I walked out. But that was a crisis that I was literally in pain around the clock for maybe 5 or 6 days. It was to the point where I had been sick at home for 3 days before, but I let myself get so far into the crisis that I didn't even have the strength to even plug in my cell phone. So I couldn't call anyone. I couldn't do anything. And it was, I guess, just a stroke of luck that I had. One of my friends, Stephanie, came and knocked on the door. She saw my car, you know, outside. But she's like, okay, something's got to be wrong. So I can't get through to her on the phone, you know, or anything. And if it wasn't for her, I don't know if I would have, anybody would have ever, you know, found me for this crisis. So I have to thank her for that, too. I just recently thanked her again. But it was bad to the point where I just didn't even have the strength to even lift my arm to plug in a phone. Like, they had, the ambulance came, and I don't even know how they got me out of the house. It was just that, it was that bad. One of the worst ones. I don't ever cry during crisis. I just realized that, I guess, going through it so many times that crying, it really makes it worse. So I try to keep myself as calm as possible because I need all, you know, any oxygen I can get, because that's already one of the sources where it's struggling. And then I don't want to dehydrate myself, you know, just crying and exhausting my body. But this was one of those crises that you just couldn't help it. There was no other, you know, there was no other way to express how bad you were feeling. So this was one of those, yeah. And it just came on you so fast that it was just like, whoa, you know, what happened?
So I have a question, because you live alone and you work as a nanny, so other people, obviously they depend on you. And from that experience, how have you learned to keep your support system in contact with you?
I see. I guess I'm kind of giving it away now because I've had, you know, people say, well, we know when you're feeling bad because you don't post on Facebook. And that's true. And I try to, you know, occasionally say, okay, I'm going to make sure I make a conscious effort that I'm going to post on Facebook so that nobody freaks out and, you know, that everybody feels like I'm okay, because I'm constantly trying to shield everybody else from seeing me sick, because when I see them worry, it makes me worry. But I'm worried about them, not me, you know, because I know I'm going to be fine at the end. But here recently I've told myself, you know, if I'm getting to the point where I know that I'm feeling bad, that I just have to stop. I have to pull myself from that situation. Or, you know, if I'm doing something, you know, too strenuous, that I need to say, okay, I need help. And that's part of my problem. When I have something to do that I just feel like, you know what, let me do it. I can do it. Because as a kid, I've been told so many times that, you know, Amy, don't do this. Or, Amy, you can't play for this long. You have to rest. So I kind of got that where it's like, I don't want anybody to tell me that I can't do it because I have sickle cell. I know I can do it. I just have to do it at my own pace. So, so now I've literally made an effort that if I'm feeling bad, if I need that extra help, if I need to just rest, I'll let someone know. Even if I'm feeling bad, you know, I have to take my medicines and I'm like, okay, I'm going to rest for, you know, 3 hours. Give me a call in 3 hours to make sure I'm okay. So I've gotten better with that, because it's been times where I just kind of kept it to myself, and I would go quietly into the hospital and then, you know, come home quietly. But that's also something that, you know, I need to work on it. And I think other patients as well, because the stigmas that they create, number one, with sickle cell, we just don't want to be bothered with the nurses, or how they're going to just look at us and think, okay, you look fine. So are you here, you know, seeking drugs? And we get that a lot. So that's a struggle for, I think, everybody in the sickle cell community to actually say, hey, we need help, or hey, we need to rest, because of the backlash that we're going to get. Or, you know, you have friends that say, you know, we invited you here and you didn't come. And it's not because we didn't want to go. It's because our body, we could feel ourselves getting sick. So it's like, okay, we need to back from this.
Right. So we're speaking with Amy Mason, person living with sickle cell and disease. And you've just in the last 3 minutes summarized so many of the issues that we've been trying to address. Mm-hmm. First, the idea of being stigmatized for having the disease, right?
Right.
The isolation that comes from managing your health and depending on yourself, and that kind of, how do we build relationships where we are interdependent, right? So,
right.
Because we don't want what I call a disease fatigue, which is where a chronic illness fatigue, where your friends and family kind of drop off because you're needing them more than the average person. And the other thing that I think is really key, and I'm really happy to hear you say that, because I'm always, my approach is generally always first instinct is as mother, is to hear you say that you are in, have become in tune with your body, and you're able to tell when you are kind of at that edge where you, if you keep going, it's going to be too much. I mean, I used to say to Marissa all the time, how could you not know you were sick? I can look at you and tell that you're getting sick. How could you not know? And I used to get really pissed off at her.
Yeah, because
I'm like, I'm looking at you. How could you not know? And
well, that was hard. That would be hard because it's not that I didn't know. It's that
you kind of avoid it because you know that it's coming. And you're like, oh my God, I got to stop my life again.
Exactly, so, stop my life again.
And my mom was the same way. She could look at me and you know, hey Amy, are you feeling okay? Or Amy, are you drinking enough water? Amy, you need to go, you know, lay down. And in the back of your mind, you know that you're not feeling the best, but you just want to put that off as long as you can because you don't know how long this crisis is going to be. It might be 24 hours or it might be 2 weeks. You just never know. I definitely get it. But it, you have to really, like you said, be in tune with your body. It takes a lot for that. But sometimes you do get those crises that you literally will find 1 second and the next second, that's it.
Right. Well,
so you do get those.
Yeah. So one of the things, too, that I think people are beginning to realize, because people like yourself and Marissa and Sickle Cell Warriors, I think Facebook, as much as I resisted Facebook, I think for our community that technology has really, really been helpful because by sharing your stories and connecting with each other, you're doing something that was never done before, and that is forming support amongst ourselves. For so long, we were isolated. We would go to a hospital, and maybe they'd have, I mean, in cold season or flu seasons or in midsummer, we could almost tell you could go, and there might be three or four other people in the hospital that have sickle cell. But normally, you would go and there might be one person, you know, your child might be the only one there and you'd be with other parents whose children had asthma and some other chronic illnesses. But Facebook has given you or given us, our community, a way to connect even if we're off across country. And I just discovered Messenger. So I'm going to put a plug out for Messenger now so that when you're in the hospital, you can actually like message somebody. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
And then I could actually see your face.
Yeah.
I mean, and that really makes me happy. So I'm going to put a plug out here to people. If you're listening and you're in the hospital, especially to those people who care about you, let them see your face. Say, let's get on. Let's schedule a time. Let us see your face. All right.
Yes. I used to admin a page called Sickle Cell Hospital Chatter. I had to step down after my grandmother passed, but I feel like that was one of the best pages created because that was the group that you could go to, and when you're in crisis, you barely sleep. So that's somebody that's up in that group, or when you're in hospital, there's someone to talk to around the clock. And a lot of times when you are in there, you have so much free time on your mind to think. You get lonely or you wonder, you know, what am I doing with my life, or I can't do anything with my life because I'm in here. You know, it's so many things you thought that you have in your mind when you're in there, but that page, that group, Sickle Cell Hospital Chat, A1 when it comes to, you know, if you're up 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, somebody's there to respond. So I do like that. And I do like that Messenger now gives it to where basically, yes, you can, when you talk to someone, you can put a face with a name, you know, it's more personable. And even if it's just a 2-minute conversation, you feel so much better than having that two-minute conversation with someone that you can relate to than no one at all.
I think we've got something to put together. I think that's another I don't know.
It's another interview,
but I also am thinking another thing to add to our list of resources that we're pulling together, and we list on our website, but I can really see that. And I could see that as a caregiver, a mother. There were times when I would look around the room and I think I've been here for 3 days and none of my family members have been here. And why haven't they been here kind of thing? And then,
right.
But I could reach out and use something like that to speak with other caregivers and mothers and fathers and uncles and aunts and husbands and wives and just friends, right, who could be sitting in the same situation, isolated. I think that's great. We need to talk about that some more offline, off interview.
Okay.
So
we can do that.
Yeah, tell us about the sickle cell cruise.
At first, the sickle cell cruise was just something, and I can't remember which group that it was in, but somebody mentioned, like, hey, I wish we could do something, you know, just to meet each other, you know, to get together to see that, you know, hey, we still are here, even though we have sickle cell. So I said, well, you know, let me look at a cruise, because another one of those huge misconceptions are people that have sickle cell cannot travel. And it's just simply not true. I mean, I've been traveling since I can remember, but, you know, as far as, like, traveling in groups like this, never anything like this. So I said, okay, this would be the most reasonable. You know, it's something that you can pay for. You don't have to pay all the money up front. And it is usually, don't even break $500 per person. And that, you know, that includes all of your meals, your room, all the activities on the ship, and you get to go to another country. So it's, there was really, you know, in my head, I was like, you can't beat this deal. You really can't beat this deal. You know, I do have a few people that are afraid of, you know, I'm afraid of large bodies of water, but I mean, I explained to them, once you get on that ship, you don't even know that you're in the water. It's like it's like in a hotel. Like, you can't even tell unless you actually go out, and, you know, to the top deck and look out, or you look out your window. There's no other way to tell that you are, you know, on a ship. But in the first year, it started off, I had, I think, 25 people. And I was amazed with 25 people.
Right.
I was happy with 25 people, because I didn't even think it was going to do 25 people. I was actually thinking maybe 10, 15 people would say, okay, we'll go. But the 25 people, the first year, we had a blast. And I just liked how we all came from different parts of the United States. We met, we came for one common goal, and we instantly bonded like family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people that I met on the first trip, they've come on every trip every year. So it was like it's continually, we're building and bonding and growing. You're my second year, I did it. I had 67 people, which that was a ton for me.
Yeah.
It was humongous. And then it was actually weird to me, because for about 15, 20 minutes, I actually stood in one spot, and people were like, we want to take a picture with you. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, what? I'm just Amy, you know. But they're like, no, we want to thank you for putting something together that we can all do. And, you know, we broke a misconception that we can travel, we can have fun, nobody got sick. And even if we felt bad on the ship, nobody's going to force us to say we need to get up and do it, because we know, you know, that, hey, I need to rest, or we need to let this person rest. So at first I was like, okay, this is real weird that I'm still standing here and taking pictures, but I'm, you know, meeting people. But I mean, after a while, I was just like, okay, I guess that I'm going to ride the wave a little bit and see where this is going to go, because it's growing tremendously. This year, this is only year three, 93 people are already booked. 93. Four coming from Denmark, two coming from Nigeria. So
wow.
It's already reached other countries. The people are, I mean, the girl that I spoke to from Denmark, she's like, I'm so excited. She's like, the population as far as African Americans in Denmark is very slim, very small. And she really doesn't know anyone with sickle cell, so she's in that other country there, you know, maybe dealing with a handful of just even African Americans, is somebody she can relate to as far as a race or cultural background, but there's no one that she can relate to with sickle cell.
Let's do a quick plug. So give us the dates for the sickle cell cruise this year and where?
We leave on September 25th through the 30th, and we're going out of the port of Miami. I usually try to do Labor Day weekend, but I couldn't get it this year. But we're going to Jamaica, and I've actually already spoke to some warriors in Jamaica that are going to meet us in Ocho Rios. So we have warriors that are coming to meet other warriors in Jamaica. But I usually do one every year, every September. I like to try to keep it in September because that's Sickle Cell Awareness Month. So I feel like at least if no one does anything, that at least they did the trip. So you're killing two birds with one stone. You're doing something for sickle cell awareness because the group is growing tremendously at a very fast rate. And then you're actually breaking another stigma that you can actually travel. You can do these things. You know, and that three, we can actually unite because a lot of times we do have, you know, things that bickering or going back and forth in the sickle cell group, but this just shows that, hey, we can get together. We can come together for one common cause. So why not do it this way? And eventually I want to do it to where I feel a ship. I want to feel a ship with as many people from different parts of the country with sickle cell that I can. If that's not making a statement, I don't know what would be. Eventually, you know, Carnival's going to, they've already told me that this is the biggest group that they've ever had. So eventually Carnival's going to say, okay, well, you know what, maybe we should just fall right into, you know, in line and say, let's do something for, you know, sickle cell, because they do work with St. Jude, and St. Jude work with sickle cell. So that's my goal, is to, so I want to fill a ship, but we go every September. This one is 5 days. I usually take a boat of, you know, how long everybody wants to go, but the first year we did 3 days, and they were like, no, we need more than 3 days. We had too much fun, you know, for 3 days. We went to Mexico last year, did 4 days, so we're doing 5 in Jamaica this year. I haven't decided on the destination for next year, but I already have people that are ready to book, so we're going to see where it goes from there.
All right, well, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back. This is Access Advocacy, and we want to thank you for joining us. We're on with Amy Mason, and we've just been discussing the Sickle Cell Cruise this year, which is going to be September 25th through the 30th, shipping out of Miami to Jamaica. Welcome back. I'm Adrienne Shapiro on Access Advocacy via the powerofvoices.com.
We're back with Amy Mason, a fellow person living with sickle cell, discussing how Facebook has allowed us to come together as a community and to advocate for ourselves personally and for others. And now we'd like to talk about how we got in touch with Amy. I was up very late at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, as I am sometimes. And I saw a post that said, beware of the fake doctor. And I thought, yes, that's very scary. And so I clicked on it, and Amy had a video. And can you tell us more about this this video and the doctor and how that happened?
It's so scary. Well, I don't know. Well, I was actually up late that night, too. The previous night, I got an inbox message from Christy, who is a fellow sickle cell warrior. And this guy was saying, you know, I have the cure for sickle cell, but, you know, you need to send me a friend request before I can give you the information. And, you know, she kind of thought that was a little odd. And, you know, asked my opinion on what I thought about it. And I, you know, I said, okay, well, I'll look into it. You know, let me, what group, you know, is this guy in? So she sends me an invite to join the group. She's admins the group, I think that which she just currently added me as an admin in the group. But she messaged me that night. She's like, I just don't know what's up, you know, with this guy. It just seems really fishy, and he keeps saying that, you know, everybody needs to send him a friend request. That's the only way that he's gonna release the cure. And that in itself just made me say, okay, something is not right. So I kind of went on to the page. And when I went onto the page, I commented to the guy, you know, and I just kind of kept it, I didn't blow his cover right away. I wanted to come at him and ask questions to see exactly what he was trying to sell, or I don't know exactly what he was trying to do. So I went, you know, right along, and, you know, I was like, okay, well, you have this cure. I'm curious as to why I need to send you a friend request, but of course, if you have a cure and if it's something that can help anybody else that has sickle cell, I want to know all about it. I'm all for the all research. You know, I'm going to look into it. So I sent the guy a friend request, but, you know, even from the friend request, he still didn't really message me or ask me anything. He continued to post on this page. So, you know, I went along with it, and I was like, okay, where's your office? Like, where do you work? So that if, you know, we do want to meet up or we want to get this cure, where can we meet you? And his page actually said he was from London, somewhere in London. So he said, well, I'm in Atlanta. Can you meet me in Atlanta? And I said, well, Atlanta, they actually have a sickle cell prom coming up. I'm going to say it's on the 13th next month. But I said, okay, I might be out there because I have intentions of going. Anything with sickle cell, I want to support. But he said, well, yeah, I can meet you there. That's fine. And, you know, at this point, I started asking him for an address, but he kind of overlooked it. He never answered, you know, directly and gave me an address. Apparently, wherever I was going to be in Atlanta, he was just going to plan to meet me there. But yet, he still never mentioned what he had that was supposedly the cure or anything. So I continue on to question him. And other warriors are questioning him, like, hey, we want to know, you know, tell us more information. But he just, you know, kept telling everybody, no, you have to send me a request first. So as I'm looking at the guy's page, the name is seems to be an Arabic name, Kareem. I don't know if I'm saying this right, Solomon. But when I look at the picture, he has on a white coat. And on the white coat, the white coat has the name here. And the name on the white coat says Alan Cohen. So I'm thinking, okay, if this guy's name is Kareem, why does he have on Alan's white coat? That just makes no sense to me. So by this time, you know, I'm still asking this guy questions, but I go online and I look up Alan Cohen, you know, and this guy, it clearly, even on the white coat, it says head and neck surgery or plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. So I looked him up. This guy's based out of L.A. I wrote down the numbers to the office. The first time I called, it was just like he was being paged. He wasn't working. It was his partner that was working that weekend. So the second time, I actually got a nurse. I got to speak with the nurse. And, you know, I said, hey, I didn't even tell her what was going on. I was like, I just need to make an appointment to see Dr. Solomon. And, you know, she said, I'm sorry, who? So I spell out, you know, Kareem's name. And she's like, we don't have a Kareem here in this office. So it was then that I tried to explain. I was like, okay, well, then you have an issue. I was like, there's this guy that's on Facebook that has, you know, Alan Cohen on his white coat, but this guy is saying that he works in your office providing a cure for sickle cell. So instantly she was kind of blown away. She's like, I don't know what direction I need to point you. So she's like, give me a second. You know, I'll call you back in about 10, 15 minutes. And, you know, we'll see if we can get this resolved. So in about 10, 15 minutes, the doctor calls me, not Dr. Alan Cohen, but his partner calls back. And, you know, I explained to him what was going on. And he was just like, basically, that's when I started recording the phone call. He's like, this guy, I don't know who he is. He was like, but this guy's a fraud. And the actual picture that he was using on Facebook was the actual doctor. That was the real Dr. Cohen. So he's caught big time now. By this time, Dr. Cohen, he's like, I don't know what's going on. But he was like, if you can, please inform anyone that, you know, in your sickle cell groups that have sickle cell, don't send this guy any money. It's not, you know, this is my picture. I don't have a cure for sickle cell. I'm a plastic surgeon. So that's kind of what made me investigate a little deeper, is the fact that he kept saying, I can't give you the cure until you send me a friend request. It was just really odd, extremely odd. And that's the only thing he would say to everyone that come in it, that they needed to send a request. And even at one point, some warriors were saying, you know, hey, you're not answering my questions. Can you please answer mine? And by this time, this guy is belittling, you know, cussing him out, calling him, you know, stupid, calling him all types of names. And I'm like, you know, if this was even a doctor would not, you know, respond in this way. So it was just, I felt like it was something that I needed to do, that I needed to put it out there that, hey, everybody that has, you know, in these groups, be careful. Because I don't want you to be scammed. We don't even know how this guy looks. We don't even know if it's his name. So I guess after I posted the recording and he saw it and he heard it for himself, he then took down the profile picture, used a different profile picture, and blocked everyone on that post that was asking him questions. So, but I have a second Facebook page. This is for my business side. So I was able to log in to see if he still had the page going. That's how I knew that he changed the picture. He also changed his Facebook name. So he still is active on Facebook, actually. And I need to, I guess, put a warning out because he's changed his name and he's changed his picture. But he's still doing the same ball game.
So it's Abdul Wahid.
Abdul Wahid, yes.
Solomon using Alan Cohn, which is spelled with a C. But I noticed that through the thread, people begin to relate him with Dr.
Donald Cohn
at UCLA, who is a stem cell researcher and currently doing trials for sickle cell. And so I just thought that was crazy, and not just, it was crazy and it was upsetting, because here we have finally have people investing in sickle cell, investing in cures, trying to find a way to help us on the level that we need help. And now we have someone who is just coming in and taking our possible treatments, you know, and playing on that.
Right. I think that it's sad for someone to play on a weakness like this. And I'm pretty sure this apparently has worked for a while, because if he's keeping these profiles going, he's probably scammed a few people at least. And I just think it's sad that people prey on, you know, things like this. This is just unreal. We already don't have research. We have research, but it's very limited. Or when we do get offered research, it's hard to get patients to participate in the research. So it's like we just keep hitting these roadblocks. And for this guy to do something like this was just unreal to me. And like I said, I need to actually update on that, because he has changed his Facebook name. I guess he switched it around, and it's Sule, S-U-L-E. Karm, I guess, K-A-R-I-M. And I know this, that he's changed it around, because this guy actually requested my sickle cell cruise page. But since he has my personal page blocked, I can't go through and, you know, approve or deny it. But he's still at large, still doing, you know, these things. He's changed his picture and he's changed the name. But as far as his agenda is still the same, saying I have a cure, you know, come and see me. And I wanted to actually call Dr. Cohen back to see if they got an update on it, see what they found out, because, you know, they were trying to, you know, find out who this guy was. That's serious, especially for them to use his picture and, you know, his information. And, you know, he's scheming under somebody else's, you know, a whole biography. You know, he's using everything to scheme.
Right. That's Dr. Cohen, the plastic surgeon.
Yes.
But this guy is using his name, but the name of, which is also the name of Dr. Donald Cohen, who is the stem cell researcher that's doing studies for sickle cell at UCLA. So you have one doctor's name and picture who just happens to have the same last name, but it's spelled with a C, not a K, of a doctor that is also in Los Angeles, that is the stem cell researcher and is working with people with sickle cell. And then our impersonator, who's a third person, that's the person that's using all of these other people's profiles, backgrounds, and research. And then he's also claiming to have pills, and the pills that are in the work are L-glutamine that just got approved by the FDA subcommittee.
Right, to go forward.
To go forward for FDA, actual FDA approval. So it's like, you know, he's taken all of these small threads and woven them into this, you know,
massive scheme.
Right.
Yeah, massive scheme. And that sucks.
What I also found that was very interesting is that, and I'm not saying everybody is out to get anyone with sickle cell, but this guy, I just got this feeling about him that it was not right. But I found that was interesting that I had some warriors actually say, you know, there's always this one person that's going to knock down the next person that's trying to help the sickle cell community. And I'm sitting here saying, I'm telling you, this guy is not real. This guy's not legit. Like, I've already talked to the office twice, but I did have some that were like, I can't believe you're doing this. I can't believe you would even do this to this guy. And on my head, I'm like, what? It just got to the point where this guy was just going too far. I mean, he was telling warriors that they were annoying, that they're disgusting, and even some were starting to call him, you know, hey, Dr. Cohen. And I don't even think he realized that he was getting caught up at this point, because he turned around and said, well, who is Alan? And we're like, well, that's you have on the white coat. So are you not Alan? So that's when he changed the picture and changed his name. So it was like, okay, you've been caught. Everybody sees it now. And everybody that was on that thread, you know, they saw it.
And now they're blocked.
Yes, everybody on there is blocked. So that should tell you something. If this guy blocked everybody on that post, you've been caught. But like I said, he's still apparently still at it, because he's changed his name now.
Well, I'd like to thank you for your diligence. And I think one of the reasons I was reluctant about Facebook was I said there's larceny in the hearts of people. And I think, you know, I mean, there's some people, even if you present them with the facts, are going to reject
it.
Yeah, reject it. But that's just an amazing story to me. I'm so pleased that you did this. Maybe instead of nanny, you want to be a detective. I don't know.
Well, this is not the first guy that I've caught that was, you know, scamming. But this was some years back. I caught another guy that was scamming, basically saying, you know, you spend $25,000 and you're cured for life. And I was just so it's heartbreaking, because everybody wants a cure for sickle cell, but people were actually, you know, trying to see where they could get this $25,000 from to give to this guy to get rid of it. It's like just that bad.
So tell me a bit about how you're managing. So you're working?
I am.
You're working.
The family I work for, they are extremely understanding. And I mean, I let them know right out of the gate, hey, I have sickle cell. But I decided to do nanny work because it was something that I love children. I've always, even when I was a teenager, you know, I'd have all of my young cousins at the house, and my aunts and uncles didn't care. They would send the kids, and I would help every single last one of them with their homework. You know, all of my cousins would get good grades because they were stopping by, you know, the house, and that's what I was doing. It was like a school after school type thing, like, I guess, offering tutoring. So I liked that. I knew I wouldn't be stressed out. Children are just a joy to work with. You just never know what they're going to say. But to me, children are easier to work with than adults. They still have their innocence. So that's what I prefer to do. But the family I work for now, they're really, you know, I mean, if I'm feeling bad and I let them know, there's no issue. But even the families I worked for previously, when I was feeling bad, they didn't mind. You know, I had friends that I made sure they met. They trusted my friends. And so, you know, if I'm sick, my friend can, you know, you will never be without a sitter. Here's my friend, or here's my sister. And they were okay with it. So I have to give it to them. You know, when you find something good like that, you just don't let it go, because it's hard to keep jobs. I've lost jobs in the past when I was being a retail manager, you know, getting sick. And it's like, okay, you missed a week of work. Now we got to terminate you. We're not going to tell you we're terminating you because you're sick. because I have been terminated under those, but they would go back and say, oh, well, you know, on this date, you clocked in 2 minutes late. You know, they would give, you know, some off-the-wall excuse as to why they had to let you go. But, you know, it's clearly it was because of me having sickle cell and missing days of work. But I found a job that I like that, you know, they understand. So I'll I will never quit. My goal is to watch those kids graduate because they're so good to me. The family is so good to me. So I can't, and even when I'm sick, the kids, you know, I get back out, and the kids have already made me, like, homemade cards, and, you know, this is just a really good family. They're good to me. So I wouldn't ever, you know. But that's another thing I just want to let people know, that it's possible that you can work, and I wish that just more of us would actually, you know, say, okay, well, let me try to do what I can and not just let sickle cell, you know, dictate your life and say, oh, well, you know, technically the government said I'm disabled, but, you know, it's still some odd and end jobs that you can do out there.
Right.
You have to, you know, you have to look for them. And I, like I said, I've had my fair share. I mean, I've had my own body care line where I did my soaps and lotions and things like this because it was something I could make even when I was feeling bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it was something that I would still keep money in my pocket. Because I don't know how people manage to live off just the SSI and, you know, keep your bills paid and things like that. I couldn't imagine doing it. Like, I have to work. That's just what it is. And you know, I will find things, craft. And I tell people all the time, find your craft. Find what you're good at. Make money from that. Because I started off small. I started knitting. And I have to give my older sister props because I have an older sister that's 10 years older. And she, when I would be sick in the hospital, she would bring me different activities to do. I learned how to knit in the hospital. I've learned how to do so many things. And, you know, one night I was knitting in the hospital, and the nurse said, well, what are you making? I said, I'm making a scarf. And she said, well, can you make me one? And, you know, I'll pay you $20. So I'm like, okay, I'm in here. I'm not doing anything else. So I told my sister to pick up the color, and I made the scarf. I finished it in that day. And I had 6 or 7 other nurses come in and order scarves for me from the hospital bed. So it's ways to do it. It's ways to make money. You just got to find them. You have to. And I know it's discouraging because even when I was 22, 23, I went through this period where I was just depressed and I was getting sick all the time and didn't know what was my purpose. I didn't know why I was here. You know, from there I said, okay, well, at this point I couldn't work because I was so sick. But sickle cell does not affect my brain. So I said, I can go back to school. Let me go to college. Let me get a degree. And that's just what it was. And after I got one, then I wanted another one. And I saw that I can do this. Now I can beat this milestone. Let me go to the next. So it's possible. And I wish more would actually attempt it. You don't even have to take, you know, classes in class because now they have online classes. Get a certificate, you know, doing something small. But something, just don't let yourself, you know, waste away because you have sickle cell. Because we're more than sickle cell.
Well, I think, you know, you are a living example of what we've been saying over and over again. It is possible, and it is finding your way. Finding, I think the first thing step is accepting sickle cell, and by that I mean not only you who's actually has the disease, but those family members and people surrounding you. Accepting it and looking at it straight and saying, this is what it is. And you will have interruptions in your life. And there are going to be places where that's really not going to be a good fit for you to be in. And so trying to find your own way so that you have continually updating your skills. Kind of like I always said, you're swimming like a shark, right? So you're scanning to find the thing that sustains you and brings you joy and fits into your life, because that is your life. And denying it or giving up on it just
is not helpful.
It's not right.
No,
you know
it's
what
not.
I mean? It's not having a life.
I think when you get to that point, because like I said, I was there and nobody could get me out of that depression but me. And my family didn't even know, you know. My mother kind of sensed it because she, you know, I had just moved into my own place by myself, about an hour away from my mother. And, you know, she's like, is anybody bothering you? And I'm like, no, you know, nobody's bothering me. But she thought that with me moving so far away that something was going on, she just couldn't put it together. Mm-hmm. And I would still, you know, keep appearances. I would still show face. And nobody ever knew. You know, like I said, it was nobody that could get me out of that but me. And one day I just, you know, I woke up from just that depression and I said, okay, this is not what my life is supposed to be. I'm 22. I'm not supposed to be here and feel like I'm 99 or that they've already written me off. So that was it. It was nobody gets turned me back from that. And after I saw that, okay, I could get myself out of this or get myself through it, that's when I knew I really wanted to mentor and advocate for people with sickle cell, because if I came through it, I feel like they can come through it too. It takes a little bit. I say that it does, but it's possible. And I'm a living proof. I'm a living example that you can do it. You can get out of that slump. And I feel like I lived a very productive life. And despite even having sickle cell, I feel like I have a good life. I feel like there are other people out there that would like to be in my position. And even when I'm thinking about complaining, I have to, you know, look at other countries and I say, you know, this, I'm in America, so I can see a doctor. You know, some of them might not be the best doctors, but I can go. You know, and you have orphan children in different countries that, you know, their parents have probably been killed, you know, from genocide, and, you know, they don't know where they're going to get their next drink of water. So I have to think like that when I'm in crisis so that I don't take everything I have for granted. Because at that point, you do everything that is exasperated, and you're like, okay, I'm over this. I'm tired of it. So I have to look at it from that point of view to keep myself afloat. And now after that, I kind of just look at, if I'm in crisis, I look at it as a time that, okay, my body needed the rest, and this is my little vacation, and it gives me time to catch up, time to just, you know, reevaluate or see what I can do different, what I can change, instead of sitting in the hospital and saying, okay, I'm here, it's day three, when am I going home? That's just not me anymore. My second year, I did the second year of cruise from the hospital bed. I graduated college from a hospital bed. And was one of the proudest moments of my life because I did it, because I didn't think I could ever do it. I was told that I couldn't do it. I was told that I was too sick. But I graduated from the hospital bed, and that was good enough for me. Didn't get to walk, but that was fine. I accomplished it.
Wow. Well, I know that you go by Amy the Warrior, but I think of you truly as an Amazon. And those words were so... I don't know.
True.
So true and so inspirational. All right. Well, we want to thank you so much, Amy. This has been a really, truly inspirational chat. And I'm so glad that you and Marissa have found each other.
Thank
you. All right.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll be right back. Well, we're just about out of time today. But before we go, I wanted to let you know that you can learn more about our organization on our website, accessadvocacy.org. are on the Access Advocacy Facebook page. That's AXIS advocacy.org. Join us again next Tuesday on thepowerofvoices.com at noon Pacific, or listen anytime on demand at accessadvocacy.org. You'll find all our programs there. I'm Adrienne Shapiro, along with Marissa Kors, and we'd like to thank you for listening.
Thank you. Push him, keep pushing.